This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball and Franchise Hockey Manager. It is the 4th of July weekend. It is the Steam Summer Sale, and right now you can get Out of the Park 17 for just $19.99 and Franchise Hockey Manager 2 for just $4.99. That's 50% off Out of the Park Baseball 17, the top-rated game on Metacritic. Not top-rated sports game, not top-rated strategy game, just top-rated game on Metacritic. And 75% off Franchise Hockey Manager 2, another great sports strategy game from Out of the Park Developments. You can get them right now through the 4th of July. That is right now through the 4th of July on the Steam Summer Sale. Again, Out of the Park Baseball 17, 50% off, $20. Franchise Hockey Manager 2, 75% off, $5. Give them a shot if you've been waiting to get Out of the Park and Franchise Hockey Manager. Now's the time. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
When you buy a video game, what do you actually get? When you spend money on digital items within the games, how do you know you're actually getting what's been advertised? What are your rights? Or do you really even have any? These are questions that have been raised once again in recent days due to two controversies in the world of sports gaming. Sony San Diego made a wide sweeping ban of player accounts in MLB The Show 16, claiming those in question had manipulated a flaw within the marketplace. But many have claimed innocence, and seemingly there are some actually genuine about that, and they are finding only frustration right now. The company may be about to backtrack, though, as they're now stating they're looking into concerns about false bannings, after at first saying they would not reevaluate any accounts, period. In FIFA, the massively popular Ultimate Team mode that generates hundreds of millions each year has had its integrity called into question, with apparent proof that some of the most valuable cards in the game have not been playing at the ratings levels they were promised. So it's been a week mired in controversy and one filled with emotion and more questions than answers. I thought it would be interesting to have a discussion on what it means for both consumers and the companies and how we got here and what it's like going forward. So for this episode of the Press Row Podcast presented by Hit the Pass, three guests join me to talk over the ramifications of what's been going on. I'm your host, Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre, and here for this episode. First, welcome back. Always, almost always on the show now. And, of course, host of the past, Rich Grisham from Hit the Pass. Out of the Park Developments, how you doing, Rich?
I'm doing great. Always a lot of fun to be here. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to talking about all this stuff tonight.
Yep. And we got TJ Lowerman, that sports gamer, who hasn't been on in a little while, and it's because he was banned, but I've recanted on that now. TJ, how you doing?
Brian, it's always a pleasure to be back here with you and Rich.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I thought you were going to be more rude about it.
No, I love you guys. I'm all about love.
All right. I appreciate that. And we've got first time ever on the Press Row Podcast, Chris, also known as Millennium OS from Operation Sports. How you doing, man?
What's going on? Huge fan of the show. Not going to lie. I've listened since episode one, and it is an absolute pleasure to be on with both hosts of the show.
We appreciate that greatly. You know, we're
cool. Very much so.
Yeah, just trying to put on a good show that's informative and you know, and fun for everybody out there to hopefully increase their enjoyment of sports games these days. So just off the top of my head, over the years, there have been numerous tests of what's actually owned when you have a video game. There's features tied into online servers now. And you had like NBA 2K14 where the entire game was tied to online servers. So when they shut down servers, people lose access to those features. EA Sports typically leaves them up for over 2 years. 2K Sports and SCEA tried shutting them down after about 12 months a few years back, and then they changed course after consumers reacted negatively to that. So now it's more like 2 years for them. And then we've got things like suspensions preventing access to online features due to things like, you know, quote-unquote hacking players in NBA 2K's crew mode, and TOS violations now in the show. And TJ, you probably have other examples you can think of. You just brought one up from this week.
Recently, Microsoft came out saying that their Xbox Fitness stuff that launched with the Xbox One, which you can pay money for fitness videos, starting, I believe it's next July, Even the videos that you have paid for, they will not be available for you to watch. So any money you spent is essentially in the garbage now, when you could have just bought those P90X DVDs for yourself.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways these things can go, and a lot of questionable actions from companies and consumers maybe not knowing what they have at their disposal, what they can be guaranteed to have in the future when they, after they've spent $60 on a game or whatever it might be, or after they've paid money post-release. So I wanted to start with the basic question of what do you actually get? What is yours to do with when you actually buy a video game? Who'd like to talk about what you feel are you actually own once you buy a video game?
Well, let me say this. It's not really defined anymore, you know, and I even think it goes back to, you know, the early days of video games, right? Video games, they're weird, right? They're not like a book, right? It's not like a magazine. It's not like a chair, you know, or a car, right? It's not a physical, tangible thing. Back in, you know, years past, obviously, you would buy a video game. You'd get a cart, right, or a disc or something like that. So technically, you own that. But even if you were to buy something like that, being tied to technology, being tied to a box at some certain point in time, either the physical product will no longer work, a disc can get scratched or a cartridge can get damaged, or the machine that you use to play it, you know, it will eventually lose its ability to function, right? These things wear out and stuff like that. So, you know, when you're talking about a physical good, yeah, you might own it, but after a certain point in time, it ceases to function, whether it's time or wear or whatever. So that's why, like, digital games in a lot of ways are so, you know, interesting and so appealing, right? Because instead of having something that technically won't work anymore, now you got something that you can, you know, just immediately download or immediately use on, you know, in some cases, like with, you know, some games or some media, right? Like, you know, with movies or music, for example, you can just play it anywhere, anytime, right? It doesn't have to be tied to a particular machine. You know, you've seen even with, like, you know, PlayStation 4 and the Vita, right? You can be playing a game on your PS4, on your Vita, right? So, like, where you're playing things and how you're playing them, you know, what do you own, what don't you own? You know, there's benefits and things to being digital. But when you go digital and you don't have that tangible good, then, you know, the concept of ownership really is different. You know, you might be able to access things faster and easier, and but at a certain point in time, if whoever controls, you know, your ability to get access to that digital media decides to shut something off, or, you know, if the particular machine that you bought it for, you know, an Xbox 360, now they moved on to a new generation, right, of the new Xbox One or PS3 to PS4. Now that thing that you bought doesn't work on the next machine. You know, you get into all these weird spaces. So, Brian, the very long-winded answer is it really these days, the concept of ownership in video games almost doesn't exist because you're either at the mercy of who truly has the ability to deliver it to you, or you're at the mercy of a machine that if that machine no longer works, then, yeah, you might technically own something, but you can't play it. You know what I mean? So it really, ownership is a very fleeting thing when it comes to video games in 2016.
It's interesting because this is, you know, video games are a consumer product. And I was sitting here trying to think of any other consumer product that you would pay money for and then a company could just cut you off from for whatever reason they determine they want to do that, after you paid money for it, leaving you with no recourse. Is there anything else people can that you guys can think of that's similar in that way?
The only thing I can think of is like a movie streaming service, you know, like where something that, you know, like, it, for example, I bought Hulu for my wife. She's a huge Seinfeld fan, loves Seinfeld, and Hulu has the entire uncut, unedited history of Seinfeld. She can watch any episode anytime. And if Hulu decided next month that they don't want, you know, or they're not going to have Seinfeld anymore, then for me, the service is of no value. So, you know, and we always hear about how Netflix, what's leaving Netflix, what's coming on to Netflix and stuff like that. But you know, that's not really the same thing. You know what I mean? It's maybe a little comparable, but that's not really somebody just arbitrarily saying, yeah, we know that you bought, you know, BioShock, but we don't want you to be able to play it anymore. So you're banned.
Right. So this, a lot of this comes down to the terms of service. So when you start up a new video game the first time, you'll get a screen and everybody just clicks through it, right? Nobody actually reads the TOS for really anything out there. But it has a bunch of stuff that legally they're getting you to essentially accept and agree to in order to play their game. You have to do this first. So, Millennium, what do you put any thought into a TOS, and what do you think that really covers, and what is it there for?
When I start a game and I see a TOS, and coming from somebody who has to consistently say, did you read the TOS to users of Operation Sports?
Sure.
The first thing I do is skip through it and assume what it is. I assume that when I put a video game into my drive, I'm going to get an online interface. I assume I can't be a jerk on the online game. I assume that I can't take advantage of the online game. But I assume that the online game is going to be there for me. I don't ever assume that it's going to be taken away from me for any reason, because I paid $60. Or, and you know, in some cases for Ultimate Team or Diamond Dynasty, for that kind of content, I paid $100 to get the extra stuff for it. So when I click through the TOS, I'm assuming that as long as I do my part in not taking advantage or being a jerk in the online interface, that it will always be there for me. For sports games are a very specific niche when it comes to that, because, you know, it's always next year. Like Rich said, BioShock. I've played BioShock 4 times. I've gone back for that story 4 times. I can't tell you the last time I've gone to Madden 11 or NBA. NBA notwithstanding, because of the Jordan stuff, the Jordan content. Mm-hmm. But again, that's story-based stuff, stuff that you're not getting in future editions. So I expect it to be there for at least a year. But for people that don't buy every year, I expect it, you know, at least possibly a 48-month cycle. I'm not 48, I'm sorry, 24-month cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mostly agree with Millennium, but I feel like I'm kind of jaded having played MLB The Show for the last, like, 7 years. Where 5 of those years online has been a thing that they market that doesn't really exist.
Online?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel more that when I'm buying a game, I'm buying it for the offline parts. And I assume the online stuff's going to work for the most part. I mean, I know they're going to have their downs and stuff. But I think for the most part, it's going to work. But if you really want to know what you're paying for, unplug your console, turn off your Wi-Fi, put the disc in. Whatever you can do, that's what you can do until the next time you plug in your console and get an update of any kind, and then unplug it again and then double check that again to make sure you still have everything.
Yeah, it can be a very different experience. I mean, I mentioned earlier NBA 2K14, where you literally could not continue any saves you started when connected online if you were offline. And that all tied into a virtual currency system, which plays a role in everything we're going to be talking about tonight, really. Now, what about the TOS, I just wanted to say, you know, the companies can put anything essentially they want in a TOS, and people click through and agree to it. Courts, like the courts, recognize that people don't actually read these things word by word, and TOS often gets tested in court, and it. Depending on the judges, depending on a jury, whatever it might be, different types of judgments are made on these things. So it's not completely offloading all liability for a company. And it's not meaning that if you accept it, you have no rights, that they can put anything in there that said, you know, anything they want. They can't do that. It's not going to necessarily be enforceable. But a TOS is an easy thing for them to point to, especially when they want to ban people. And that's what SCEA did Sony San Diego did with the show this week. So, TJ, explain to me why. What are the type of things that, and why would a company like, or a publisher like them, why would they want to ban people to begin with? Because that's cutting them off as revenue sources, right? So it would make sense that they wouldn't want to get rid of anyone. But what are some of the reasons why they would want to ban people?
Right. You would think that their revenue source is because they are putting money into the game. But one of the main reasons people get banned, not only from the show, but also from all the EA Sports and 2K games, is they can be doing things that are manipulating the market to make themselves get more of the currency. So they're not putting any more money into the game. They're just taking the money out. And one of the main things most of those games rely on is the buying of selling of cards with that little tax they put onto all the transactions to take some of the value out of, or some of the money out of the system. Mm-hmm. So if you're kind of not doing that, you're working around the system and messing up their whole thing, they're going to ban you because they're not going to be a real big fan of that. But that's just one thing. They can always ban you for, you know, using an exploit in the game or just being a terrible person to your fellow game players. I don't know. The way I talk to Millennium, I have no idea how I'm still allowed to play MLB The Show.
That's true. I've heard that.
But I talk to him in love, so maybe they feel that. But there's a lot of things that you could do to get booted.
The thing that surprises me is that is the sense that somehow people are entitled access to a platform. If I own a platform, right, I am able to decide who can access that platform, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and if I, you know, I don't owe it to anybody to give them access to something. Somebody may have purchased a game. They may have spent $60 for the game. I'm not taking the game away from them. But if they have violated rules that I have set up, then, you know, it's, I'm, as the platform holder, I'm well within my rights to prevent people from accessing the platform. So, you know, there's no, I don't understand the sort of sense of you know, entitlement. You know, just because you bought a game doesn't mean that you have unlimited access to go utilize systems for your own personal gain without having scrutiny placed upon your activities, right? You're not given, there's no, you know, God-given right to be able to go online into a community and play it. If you do or say certain things that you know, are the people who own the platform don't like, you're out. And I don't understand why there's any controversy around that.
All right, so let me ask you this, Rich, because I think there's a gray area as far as, you know, what constitutes cheating or what constitutes breaking these rules that you would personally have. Because it's not like with the show, with the situation with the show, it's not like people literally hacked the game and stole stubs, right? It was a flaw, purportedly anyway, as far as we know, it was a flaw in their system that, you know, some people apparently discovered, although word of it didn't seem to really get around, unlike every other exploit out there. But there, you know, what's the responsibility on the developer's part to prevent these type of exploits from happening in the first place? Because these people didn't go, you know, they discovered something that was maybe wrong, but they did not create something wrong.
So what? Just because you don't create something doesn't mean that it's okay for you to use an exploit. I mean, you know, MLB The Show is far from the only game or, you know, platform out there that as people use it, they discover things that were not intended to be done that way, right? I mean, you can't name a popular online game. I mean, was it the Division when it came out? You know, there were just huge problems with people using all sorts of exploits. You know, there's a huge Counter-Strike Go controversy around, you know, people using, you know, in-game currency and buying and selling and trading it on Steam for skins and stuff like that. Like, you can't, you know, you look at any sort of, you know, significant platform where people find and exploits and cheats and stuff like that. There's no way as a developer that you can plan for and build around any possible scenario when you introduce the wild card of human beings accessing your platform. Nor, you know, whether you are the biggest video game maker in the world or whether you're a tiny little independent game maker, right? You build and design your system for how you want it to work, but then when real people enter the system, they're going to find stuff you never planned for. So, you know, you as the developer, I think you owe it to your community to try to make things right, to make updates, to make fixes and things like that. You don't really necessarily owe anything directly to the people that are playing your game. However, if you don't provide the kind of community and the experience that they like, eventually they won't buy your game anymore, and then you're out of business, right? So I don't think it's some sort of contractual obligation that a publisher has to do something. But on the other hand, just in order to remain in business and optimally have an experience that everybody likes, you have to do those things. But there's a big difference, I think, between being obligated to do something and just doing something so that you can keep your community overall in a good place. Because if you have your community in a good place, people will buy your game and buy your digital cards and participate in it. And if you create or embolden an environment full of toxicity and problems, people are going to leave, and then, you know, you got nothing.
So, Millennium, I've got a question for you here. You know, what's the threshold then for action as far, because if SEEA had banned everybody who exploited bunts and steals last year in MLB 15, there would have been like 8 people playing online. Is it just related to money? Is it just related to, well, this is our money-making mode? Or is it because if it was solely about creating a balanced and enjoyable experience online, they would have done something about that.
Yeah, the thing is you always see developers move a little faster when the money is on the line, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically the show, because of the marketplace. Especially last year, they had an issue where a bunch of the items in the marketplace went up huge in value, and it was another glitch, and it was something they acted on then. But my expectation is if it's a part of gameplay, like you're explaining bunts or, you know, some of the Madden gameplay or even some of the FIFA gameplay,
mm-hmm.
if it's something that's built into gameplay, I'm okay with it. That's taking advantage of, and even though I'm a huge sim gamer, I come from a sim gaming, whatever the quote unquote that means. I come from where I want to see baseball played like baseball. I want to see football played like football. I don't want to see it, you know, go for it on fourth down. But if the game builds in the ability to do that, go for it. That's your prerogative on online gaming. When it gets to something like it's fourth and one and you have a play that cannot be stopped,
mm-hmm.
like a glitch, like an actual glitch in the gameplay, not something just normal gameplay, like you have to put in like the Contra code and all of a sudden your entire team falls down.
Oh, there was the quicksand glitch in, is it Madden 04? I don't remember what it was, which one of those, but there was the quicksand glitch, which you pressed a certain sequence of buttons and it made the defensive team fatigued down to like zero for that play. So that's a good example of that.
Yeah, exactly. And then even something like in the show this year, there is rampant DDoSing, which is almost putting more lag into the game artificially.
Mm.
And you're seeing that in the Battle Royale mode where it's a 3-inning high reward, high stakes if you get to 20 wins.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not expect that to happen. Anything that's outside of general gameplay, I don't want to happen. I don't want to see people getting stubs without earning them, either by flipping cards or by playing the game or purchasing them. I don't want to see people be able to knock me offline while we're playing. But if it's a bunt that's in gameplay and it's something that even though I don't want to have to counteract it, I can. I can set my third baseman in bunt defense within 3 seconds of the pause timer. I'm okay with that because even though I don't want to see it, it is a valid game strategy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny. In that case, it's like every time somebody comes up that's got like higher than 80 speed, I have to do that. Even this year.
Exactly. That's what I do whenever I'm playing, and especially I kind of know the drag bunters. Their bunting's a little better this year, but I've seen it's terrible. You're absolutely right. It's still way too easy to bunt with David Ortiz, one speed, go up the baseline.
I love that he has a speed of one. I don't remember who I was talking to about it, but just the fact that they have ratings that go that low, because you don't see that I don't think you see that in any other sports game where someone would have any rating that's a one or a zero. I'm not sure if there's a zero. There are pitchers that are either one or zero. I don't know, but that amuses me anyway.
You got to use the whole range.
That's why you should, but it's the leagues who have a problem with that. It's the leagues who wouldn't let NBA Live do a spread out scale that had guys rated in the 30s. So, but anyways, back to what you were talking about.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I mean is, so if it's gameplay and there's something in the gameplay itself that you can do that is counter, that I can counter, perfectly okay with it. If it's something that I can't counter, that you're doing something outside of gameplay to make happen, mm-hmm. that I believe should be against toss, and that should be a punishable offense.
So you bought a game, you own this product, you get banned. Let's say you get banned. Do you deserve an explanation of why that's happened, Rich? Should they present you proof of what they claim you did?
Well, I mean, yes. If you get banned, you should get more than just a message on the screen that says you've been banned, right? You should, you as a paying customer, if part of what you bought is no longer accessible, you deserve an explanation. Proof? Yes, you should also.
Should there be like an opportunity to appeal? I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, should there be? Yes, of course there should, because mistakes can be made. You know what I mean? We are all talking about human beings and computer systems. Pretty sure there's not a human being alive hasn't made a mistake, and there's no computer system that is perfect because they're designed by humans. So in principle, the answer to all of those questions is yes. Now, in practice, the answer has become a lot more difficult because you're talking about typically a small number of individuals who are managing this process and hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are on the receiving end of it, and just the physical realities of people and time can get in the way, right? And I don't know that that is or is not the case here, right? So the answer to your question is yes, if you're banned, you deserve a explanation. You deserve to be presented the reasons why and the data to back it up. And you deserve the opportunity to appeal. And like I said, but when you're talking about like a video game studio like Sony San Diego, I don't think they got 5,000 people. I doubt they have 40 or 50 people managing the community. No. They literally just probably don't have the manpower to do all of those things. Is that right? Is that wrong? You know, that's another debate. But right.
That shouldn't necessarily be the consumer's problem.
It shouldn't necessarily be the consumer's problem, but it's a reality that, you know, you have to face.
So, TJ, let's say you turned on, let's say you didn't get banned, but let's say you turned on the game a couple days ago and you got the message you were banned and you had no access to online and your life is Diamond Dynasty and you've spent hundreds of dollars in Diamond Dynasty and you put in hundreds of hours in Diamond Dynasty. What would be your reaction to that, and what would you expect the process to be following that?
Just real quick, can we please just hold on that and just imagine the dream world that it would be without him online. thank you, sorry.
Melania might win a game.
Oh.
It'd be crazy.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I would throw a hissy fit for a little bit. But then, you know, I would hope cooler heads would prevail. You know, I'd try to reach out to the company, see what's up. I mean, granted, I'm sure I would flip out, start yelling at everybody, cursing at everybody.
How many videos would you have made, TJ?
Let's all harken back to MLB 14 when it was supposed to be a midnight launch.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't come out till 4:30 in the afternoon.
We got together at, what, 6 a.m. for a stream?
Something like that. I was like, Brian, get online. We're going to talk about this. I'm so angry.
Yeah, I was still awake. I think I had been up all night or something.
Yeah, I don't think you had gone to sleep.
Yeah. So that was an interesting one. I don't remember probably what I said during that. But yeah, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I would hope that there's a way to contact them. And of course, they have a Twitter. They have, in this case, MLB has a Twitter, a Facebook. In the forum post, which I don't know if you can actually get to the forum, because when you're banned from the show, I don't know if you can actually get to the Show Nation.
Oh, yeah. You might not be able to.
You are banned from the forum. If you're banned from the show, you are banned from the Show Nation forum.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to post. You could not be logged in and still read, I suppose, right? Or create a different account.
Yeah, you could always do that.
Yeah,
they had an email to reach out to if you had a problem,
which I'm not sure anybody has heard back from, which is another issue we'll get to. But so it sounds like you would go through the process, TJ, which is
I hope I would.
Yeah, the emotion might cause you to react slightly differently, right? And so that's why I wanted to ask Millennium, recap to me the last few days. How the community has reacted, how the individuals who have been banned reacted, how the people who celebrated their bannings, or everybody else, or assumed they were all legit, all those reactions. How has that come together, and how has that changed over the last few days?
But hold on, before you answer that question, just even for my sake, I'm sort of aware of the details, but I don't know all the details. What brought us to this point? Specifically, before you get to that, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Brian. But
no, it's fine.
There's still some details on this I'm a little fuzzy about.
Right. So, Millennium, you want to just take it from the top on there?
No problem. On Monday, well, let's start with Friday. The TOS post, the TOS post from Ramon, went out on the Show Nation forums, talking about what was a bannable offense, and including the forums. They were talking about harassment on the forums as well. Middle of the day Monday, a large number, we don't know how many, there have been numbers thrown out, but nothing official, were banned in-game, and all they got was a message on their screen that they had been banned for, wasn't griefing, it was for an exploit, for using a game exploit. Ramon, the show Twitter, and then Victor and Adam, who are two employees for SDS, were on Reddit, Twitter, and their forum, responding to individual users saying that they were using a Stubbs exploit, the number of times certain individuals used the Stubbs exploit, and how many Stubbs they acquired from that. Certain users, I thought the largest one I saw was 50 plus times for 3 million Stubbs, which one for one without the bonuses when you're purchasing them is $3,000. At that point, everyone started bombarding their social media asking, well, I'm banned, I'm banned, I'm banned. And at some point, Ramon said, I'll get to the people in the morning. And that was the last message we saw for Monday night. And then Tuesday, they were zero dark 30. They were completely silent until midnight Tuesday, where the official account and
midnight
Ramon.
Wednesday, actually.
Oh, midnight Wednesday. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. So midnight Wednesday. Ramon and the official account both tweeted the same tweet that they had heard the outcry, they care about the community, and they would be getting to people soon. To be not specific, but round up what they said. No one to this point knows exactly what the problem was. There have been rumors of Victor said cancellation exploit, an exploit that was cancellation of orders on the market. The rumor is that you got Stubbs back for canceling certain transactions, but only one user that I know of has spoken to anybody, and that's the number one player in the world, Pitching Rebel, and he spoke with Lance, supposedly. There was no proof of this. He just said that he had spoke with him, and Lance provided him a transaction sheet of what went wrong and said that it wouldn't be reversed. And then again, all communication was cut off. So no one actually knows what the exact exploit was. Nobody knows how long the bans are for. Nobody knows what the response is at this point.
So let me ask this question then. Do you think that Sony San Diego is purposely torpedoing their community for no good reason at all?
Absolutely not.
So do you think that the majority, if not all of the people that were banned, committed a offense that was worthy of them being banned?
I don't know.
Oh, no, I'm not saying do you know. I'm saying do you believe?
My belief is that there was some percentage of the community that did, and some percentage of the community that may have committed it and not known from some of the rumors that I've heard, mm-hmm. and some percentage of the community that may have gotten caught up in an algorithm that saw certain stubs transactions flagged a little more sensitively than maybe they should be.
I'll say this, Rich. I've seen reactions before to bannings in different games for different reasons. And, of course, naturally you're inclined to think nobody's going to admit guilt, right? But there's been a passion behind the how vehemently a lot of people have denied doing anything or even knowing what they've been accused of doing.
Right. And I'm not suggesting that everybody who's been banned did something wrong. I'm merely like, you know, I'm trying to discern, like, is this something where an honest series of mistakes have been made and perhaps communication just hasn't been that good? Mm-hmm. Or is this something where, you know, a real grievous mistake, hyper aggressive mistake has been made, in a situation where somebody who almost nefariously does something to just sort of rid themselves of a problem. I don't ever get the sense that that's the situation that happened. It feels to me like it's more of a situation where perhaps a little bit more forewarning and communication could have taken care of a lot of this, because at the end of the day, I don't think the MLB The Show guys are in any position to just really tick off a lot of their core community. I think they probably thought that they were going to be almost lauded as heroes getting rid of a lot of people that might be causing problems to a lot of people that are trying to honestly enjoy the game.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think part of the problem now and part of the animosity that's grown since that point was related to almost the level of satisfaction they had in delivering the news, and then the level of satisfaction they had in calling anybody who said they didn't know what they did or that they didn't do anything, basically liars, and then blocking them on Twitter. And I think that really escalated the situation from this could be a, you know, honest mistake to they may have been severely overconfident in what they were doing. And then they disappeared for almost 2 days, which to me says they went back and started looking and started thinking, you know what, we may not have been right about everything.
Right. It's better to be silent, though, than to be in certain situations, it's almost better not to say anything than it is to say the wrong thing. Right. So I always err on the side of keeping quiet until you absolutely have to say something. And yeah, I'm not saying anything happening here is right or wrong, you know, but sometimes it's better not to say anything other than, you know what, we are experiencing technical difficulties. We will be back
right
as soon as we can. You know what I mean? Like, so sometimes that's the right thing to do.
So they're saying something without saying anything, right? And that's basically what they did when they tweeted, hey, we're looking into things. So they communicated that they didn't just disappear, they're investigating, but they didn't actually give any specific details on what's going on. And if they had done that on the day that they banned everybody, okay, you know, I think people would have been, you know, they would have hung on a bit to wait and see what happened. But then it was the way they delivered the messaging to begin with changed the way people perceived the situation, and they felt threatened, because it wasn't just, hey, your account was banned. If you feel like that's in error, then contact us, we'll help you. It was, your account's been banned. Sorry, too bad. You know, see you next year, essentially.
If I'm playing Diamond Dynasty, or if I'm playing Battle Royale, what is the, you know, and I stumble upon one of these, you know, guys that is, you know, a cheater. And I'm not saying all the people that were banned were cheaters, but let's acknowledge the fact that some people were doing things that were not in this, were at best not in the spirit of playing the game, right? So if I'm a player and I stumble upon one of these guys, what's the effect on me as an honest player if I run up against one of these guys? What actually happens to me?
So here's how you're impacted negatively by potentially like this exploit giving people unlimited stubs, is that you would have spent all your time in building your team rightfully, you know, in the proper manner, by playing games, by completing missions, by completing you know, the different types of modes they have in Diamond Dynasty, or, you know, whatever it might be, flipping cards in the market, which is, you know, not a reason why you would get banned, supposedly. You know, it's actually encouraged. So you would build up your team organically or through spending your money, but you would end up, number one, facing people online who have unbelievably stacked lineups. I mean, I've faced some people online where they pretty much have like a, you know, upper 90s diamond, you know, guys that you cannot obtain for cheap, and they haven't played that many games. Their record's like 34 and 30, and they've got a lineup that looks like, you know, they've played 3,000 games or something to get to that point. I've played, I think my online record includes 400 games or something now, and my lineup is really good, but it doesn't have a Mike Trout at every spot in the order. You know, it's the imbalance there in game, but also how that affects the market. If you have, you know, just like if a mass amount of money were to go into any investment, it disrupts things, right? So you're bringing in artificially created stubs. That's going to affect the way the everything is valued on the market. So that also affects people, depending on how expensive or how cheap they can obtain cards with their properly earned stubs. So, you know, trying to knock that out is a good thing. You know,
right.
Just like there was no, you know, people were not upset that they're trying to get rid of cheaters or exploiters, whatever it might be. People are upset that, you know, some people that may not have recognized that what they had done, or people who were swept up into it.
What? People that,
so this is how that
used an exploit that didn't recognize they were using an exploit?
Let me explain how that happens, Rich. So there are some people who claim already who were banned that this canceling exploit, that everyone assumes that's what it is, involved like putting an order in. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that automatically takes stubs out of your account. And then if you buy it, then, you know, the stubs are gone, or you can cancel it and get your stubs back. So what was happening, supposedly, you know, this is what we believe, is it's related to the website. You could cancel it on the website, cancel it on the console at about the same time, but you would get double the stubs back, because it wouldn't register it on one, or it would register it on both, and for some reason one didn't cancel out the other. Now, this could happen. If that's the procedure, it could happen, and it could happen with people with cards that have low values. I think it might have been that top player that Millennium cited, said that, you know, he believed it was related. There were, or he had been told he had a certain number of transactions, and some of them were for like 100 or a couple hundred stubs, which to someone with millions of stubs is irrelevant, that nobody would. If you have access to an exploit, you're going to exploit it for everything you can get. You're not going to do it for 100 stubs, which is worth, what, 10 cents or something. So that's why people are saying, you know, I may have canceled it on the web, and then, you know, somewhere along the line, it canceled on my console later or something. And that kind of thing could happen theoretically, Rich. I'm not saying it doesn't sound super realistic to say that it could accidentally happen, but that's a theory out there that some people maybe were banned for that reason. I mean, Millennium, do you have any other thoughts on this stuff?
Well, the gentleman you're speaking of, Pitching Rebel, said that when he was given his transaction list and he was on a show with some of the community leaders last night, I believe. I'm sorry, Wednesday night. Or I'm sorry, he was on a show Tuesday night. He said that his top transaction was flagged for 8,200 stubs.
Which is nothing, right?
That's, for them, right. Yeah. The thing is when I'm flipping cards, because I flip cards the same way, I don't really look at the total of my stubs. I know what I'm looking at is my completed orders, because I wanna buy it for cheap and sell it for more. I'm never really looking at my total stubs, because it's always between like a 50 and 70K mark. So, and that's
an interesting point too, because, you know, I'll know I'm making stubs when I'm flipping a card, but I'll know about how much I'm making. But you're right, I'm not really staring at my total, and I couldn't tell you if it was accurately adding or not. And we don't really even know what determines how, you know, we do with the marketplace, but. Why do I get a certain amount of stubs for playing a 9-inning game that differs each time? You know, why do I, like, all these different things that relate to stubs, and it's hard to keep track of what you have, and you just kind of have to. I've sat there and I'm like, did I not get credit for selling that card? I've had that question in my mind before, and then decided later that, yeah, okay, I did. But it's because we're not intently tracking that main number, like you just said.
Well, and to add on to that, just so it's known, I don't believe that everybody is innocent. There were some people that had claimed, and again, I don't know who is and who isn't, but some people were claimed to make 3 million stubs. I can understand missing out on a couple hundred thousand over a couple months, because the exploit was supposedly fixed about 3 weeks ago. But 3 million stubs is not something that goes unnoticed.
Oh, yeah.
But
the other issue also is, if this stuff happened earlier in the year when the servers were a disaster, I mean, are we sure that the data they have is actually accurate? There's a lot of questions.
It's a very good point, especially like you said, servers were not clean. A lot of, remember, the challenge failed. Mm-hmm. A lot of that. Remember, there was even a compensation for the servers. There was like a bundle that was given out for servers being down. So. Mm-hmm.
So TJ, we kind of talked a little bit there about communication, and this is one area you have experience in, because you handle community management for Out of the Park Baseball now. So, you know, is there anything you would have done differently, or are they just like I know you're hamstrung somewhat as a PR or a marketing or or social media or a community outreach type position by what executives above you essentially determine you're allowed to do.
I believe his name is Rich.
Yeah, Rich Grisham. Lays down the law. But that's true of anywhere. So, you know, when you look at how they reacted to this situation, or how EA has reacted to the FIFA stuff, you know, do you give them leeway on that, or do you think they should have done something different?
Now, in my position that I am now, I definitely give them more leeway than I would have in the past. Like, we even saw it. I mean, this didn't really affect anybody for real, but was it last time around E3 when someone put up that post on the NCAA football Facebook page with like the heartbeat?
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yep.
And every place ran a story on that, and EA was silent.
Yeah.
They didn't say anything until they were completely ready to say everything they wanted to say about it. And I assume that's how Rich would be if there was a situation. Like, because you figure all these people got banned. So, I mean, there's been a number has been thrown around, about 1,500 people. And then maybe 100 people say they have been unfairly banned. So, I mean, if you fix 1,400 people that were screwing up the game for other people, awesome. And there's 100 people that are kind of screwed until something gets fixed. But if Rich comes to me and says, these people are all banned. Here's why they are banned. Now, you can't say what they did exactly to get them banned. Like, there's only so much that the communications team can do from their end.
Yeah.
So if, like, if I assume if we had the ability, if Out of the Park was built this way with servers and stuff, Rich would give me the list that says these people are banned. This is what they did, and this is what you can say about it. That's all I can do.
But
I can disagree with it to Rich all day long, but what I say, public facing, has to follow the company line. And if that means I'm not allowed to say anything, I have to do that. That's my job. And we've seen for years that Sony San Diego does not have the biggest community team, and when things happen, they take longer to get messages out.
And there's more to it than that, too, right? TJ is the community manager for Out of the Park Baseball because he's an amazing community manager, right? Like, if I go to him and I go to TJ on a regular basis and he comes to me on a regular basis, hey, what do you think about this? Or, like, I'll ask TJ, what do you want to do about this? Like, he is more in tune with the community than I am because that's what he's doing all the time. So if I went to TJ with a list of 1,500 people that are going to be banned, TJ would go, dude, do you have any idea what this is going to do? This is going to cause a huge problem. Right. This is going to cause a huge problem. And I'll have, you know, we'll have a conversation. I might be like, well, it's a bigger problem if we don't do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or maybe I'll say, really, what the hell are you talking about? Like, hopefully I wouldn't say that. You know, hopefully I'm more in tune with what's going on than that. But and that gets back to my original sort of thought process here. I don't know anything about what is going on here, but I mean, meaning I don't know anything
that's
going
Rich.
On. No, behind
Thanks
the scenes.
Thanks for coming on the show.
And, no. But Rich, that's okay point because not many people actually know what is going on behind the scenes except for the people at Sony San Diego.
But my point is, I don't see any reason whatsoever that the guys that are running the show would go through this process without feeling extremely confident that they're doing that what they're doing, A, needs to be done, you know, for the greater good of the community, and that the people that they are impacting with this, they have every reason to do that, right? Like, it's not worth the hassle to do this unless you have really compelling evidence to support your banning and you have the complete buy-in from all of the stakeholders internally. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why I gotta believe that they would not choose to do this arbitrarily or without really going through a thoughtful process, because the blowback isn't worth it unless they really have incredibly strong reasons to do it. I could be wrong. It just seems to me crazy that they would do this for anything other than they really felt like they needed to do it.
Look, and you're right, Rich, but ultimately, if there are people who shouldn't have been banned, they got banned, right? And if there are people who feel like the communication's poor, the reasoning for why this happened or whatever procedures they're going through now is irrelevant to them. It doesn't matter. They're going to, you know, have their own reaction to it, and they're going to think, wow, they're not talking to me. They're ignoring the email I sent them. They blocked me on Twitter. You know, this kind of stuff, or I got banned. All I've done is bought the show for, you know, 6 straight years and put money into, you know, $100, $300, whatever it might be. So the reasoning doesn't matter, right? To those people, it doesn't matter. Now it matters. You have procedures you have to follow and all of that,
but then those people, Brian, then become the most vocal in, you know, that potentially then poison the well for the larger community, and then you wound up, you know, potentially shooting yourself in the foot. Like, again, using Out of the Park as a example, Out of the Park baseball community is incredibly loyal and knowledgeable, but it's also, there's not hundreds of thousands or you know, millions of these players, right? So, like, for us to do anything, you know, we have to consider the core longtime players of the game before we do anything else, right? And And so, you know, it's again why, you know, unless they just made a horrific decision, which is possible, you know, they had to know that doing this was going to A, cause controversy, and B, you know, have a lot of people complaining and saying, I'm not going to buy this game anymore, and here's why you shouldn't buy this game anymore. And I think they just thought, felt to themselves like, well, you know, the people who were banning are making this game worse for a whole lot more people. And eventually, you know, they're going to just quit their complaining and people will forget about this, right? I mean, I got to believe that's what they thought.
Yeah.
Well, and the other part of this is coming out on Twitter immediately after the banning and giving exact statistics to specific users. Without giving reasoning other than that, like, then there was no email sent. They logged on and said, you have been banned from online gaming for MLB The Show. So they go to Ramon or the MLB The Show Twitter or, like I said, Reddit, where a gentleman who I do not know who it was, but it was Adam SDS and was verified as a San Diego employee, giving exact statistics. Like, you have used this exploit this many times for this many stubs, and then immediately turning around and going silent.
But so is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it was meant as a good thing. It was a let us show the community we are taking a stand against people who are going to try to do what they did last year. I think last year had a big part of this too, because last year the market inflated. I believe it was around July 4th, around the same time, maybe a little later, where there were certain pieces of equipment and the Stars and Stripes equipment that was last year, mm-hmm. you couldn't get it because it was all like 300,000, 400,000 stubs. And the only reason it was like that was because of another glitch. So this year, I think they came out and said, you know what, we're going to ban everybody and then we're going to start giving the proof. If they ask for it in a public forum, we're going to give it back to them in a public forum.
Shame them.
I mean,
almost what it was like.
So I guess where I'm struggling is, like, you know, people are complaining that they're getting banned and then they're not told why, but now they're getting told why and they're complaining about that too.
Well,
I don't.
That's not true, actually.
Yeah.
So now they're saying that they're being given false statistics.
They're saying that they were not aware of it. Now, I'm not saying that's true. I'm inclined not to believe some of them and to believe some others.
Well, and also just to point out before you continue, this is just a few people who got these statistics, Rich. It's not everybody. It was just, I don't know, two or three people probably, right?
Right. I believe Ramon interacted with two or three people. And then on Reddit, I know of two people that were interacted with exact statistics. So but the problem is for me is coming from and a much smaller scale and a different forum. But on OS, whenever we ban somebody, the first thing they see when they're banned is the reasoning and where they can go.
Yeah, and I think we all agree that that is a threshold that is reasonable, right? If you're banned, you should know why, and you should have some way that you can appeal. Now, we also know that, unfortunately, in many circumstances in society, right, like, you know, if you own an Apple product, you know, and you have a problem, you're kind of screwed. You either got to go make an appointment at the Apple store.
They don't have problems. Apple products don't have problems, Rich.
You got to go make an appointment at the Apple store with somebody who calls himself a genius, and God forbid you're 4 minutes late to the appointment. Your appointment is now canceled, and you got to, you know, make an appointment that another day because, of course, you don't have a life or a family or a job or anything. You could just get to hang out until the geniuses decide that they're willing to see you now, right? Or, you know, try to call Amazon, right? Granted, Amazon's great, and their customer support is great, but, like, sometimes if you got a problem, like, there's no place for you to go. That's also part of, I think, the world that we live in, too. It's not just video games. So, again, the threshold is reasonable. Tell me why and give me some place to talk to. Unfortunately, because of the world that we live in, that reasonable threshold, just for practical reasons, unfortunately, isn't always able to be met.
So, well, and I also think that patience-wise, I think there was an extreme lack of patience on a lot of fronts here. You can send an email to Sony, but a lot of people were sending an email and expecting an answer immediately back, or even within 24 hours for, as TJ touched on, a company that has not set an expectation of a lot of quick communication. There were people as early as Tuesday morning threatening a lawsuit. I mean, that's normal, but there has to be some kind of patience set and saying, I'm going to email them, and when they get back to me, until then, I'm going to play franchise mode, or I'm going to go play something else, or I'm going to take my time somewhere else.
Well, I'll tell you what I think, why there's no patience, and that's because if you like the scenario I presented to TJ earlier, let's say you didn't do anything, you log in, says you're banned, they're calling people essentially liars on Twitter for saying that they didn't do anything wrong. Do you think you're going to email and get back a satisfying response from them?
If I'm one of the people, that's a tough spot to be in. You're absolutely right. Because if I see that they're calling out other people, and that brings up a whole new front to this, is that the community was immediately parsed.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sect of the community that was immediately going, oh, you cheated, get out of my game. And other side of the community was like, well, we didn't do this. And two of the top players in the game were two of the first ones on that stool, ready to get on the firing squad.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I talked to one of them extensively over DM that was worried about his online rep. And obviously that's something that at this point I don't worry about, and some people don't worry about. But as a top player in the game, to be labeled a cheater.
Yeah, can you shake that after that? I mean, that's like if you got falsely accused of PEDs in sports, right? People still think of you that way, right? It never really washes away.
First, you got to find somebody who has been falsely accused of PEDs in sports. Then we could probably have that conversation.
Well, there's people who haven't been proven and that are just assumed to
that's
have
That's a very
done,
different
right?
thing,
yeah.
Ryan.
Yeah,
very different.
That's true. Anyways, so I want to transition a bit here before we get on for too long and to something that's somewhat related, although probably done unintentionally, although some would have theories that it is intentional, and that's the FIFA thing, which is related to digital content as opposed to just access to your entire game. So what happens here with FIFA, and this could be going back all the way to when Ultimate Team started and when they implemented this chemistry feature, is that these high-valued cards in the game were not playing up to their ratings, essentially. They were not getting the bonuses they were supposed to be getting. So lower-rated cards, cheaper cards, easier-to-obtain cards actually played better. And so what you had was consumers who put their time and money into acquiring these cards, and they didn't get what they were told they were getting. And so when Millennium mentioned lawsuits, well, if there's between the two of these things, a class action lawsuit would be more likely with this FIFA story. So unlike a physical product, which you can inspect and which either works or doesn't, I think with digital items, there's kind of a level of trust that has to be involved there instead, right? There's because you don't have many ways to evaluate or analyze what you got. Is that exact? If you have a card in FIFA and it says it's got it 80 rated in pace or whatever rating it might be, how do you actually know it's that, right? You don't necessarily. You just have to believe that's what you're getting, and there's very little in the way of consumer protections and regulations, and this is now an area of these games that's collecting hundreds of millions of dollars. TJ, since you play Ultimate Team in all these games, what does it mean if you had kind of the highest rated cards, the most expensive cards, the ones that everybody wants, but they're not actually as good as they're supposed to be? And what does that mean to how you enjoy the mode? What does that mean to how the economy of the mode works?
Yeah, and let me kind of clear it up a little bit, because the main thing they're talking about with this FIFA thing in particular is that the chemistry bonuses weren't being applied correctly,
which are considerable. That's a considerable part of how good your team is.
Right, but again, that's one of those things where it's like black magic, because I don't know if they've ever actually told any of the numbers. And there's a lot of people that are like, well, it doesn't really matter your chemistry. You can just use a great team and you'll be fine. And then there's other people that will say, I can win as long as I have 100 chemistry and I'll be good no matter who the players are. So the main thing was they were seeing the day one release cards that much like Madden, if your rating is over a certain number, you're going to unlock extra animations, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically in FIFA, it's extra moves that you like, dribble moves and stuff like that. So if like the cutoff is 85 and your card's rated to have like 84 dribbling, but you need 85 to do this move, if he doesn't have any chemistry boosts, he's not going to be able to do it. But if there are players around him that give him chemistry to boost up that attribute, he would then be able to do the move. Now, what seems to be the case is some of the team of the week and like international man of the match, all the super rare cards that come out that are always the most expensive ones, they seem to not be applying that chemistry right. So, like, if you had a guy with 82 dribble and he got boosted over 85 to do the move, awesome. But if you got this man of the match card that was an 84 dribble and you would expect him to get that same boost, he wasn't getting it. He wasn't getting the unlock for that move. And that's, I guess that's the easiest way to break down what's kind of happening. They're just not getting that boost that they're expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if they ever came out and said these special cards are going to get the same boost. I mean, we assume it. That's how the case would be.
Well, they said they're investigating the, you know, the information, which would suggest that they didn't know this was happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But then the speculation from the community is they're knowingly tuning those cards down. So if you have this amazing team of all these guys, they're all going to play amazing together, and you're never going to be beaten.
Well, yeah,
and they want to try to keep a level playing field.
Yeah, and that people are going to get wiped out and then stop playing.
Yeah.
So that's a concern. Rich, is it unnerving to you that the Ultimate Team type modes are not regulated or monitored? Because to me, it feels like the early days of fantasy, of daily fantasy sports, where you know, we've all seen now how that industry has quickly evaporated due to the scrutiny once they started to become big. And these Ultimate Team type modes are making hundreds, like I said, hundreds of millions of dollars just in FIFA, hundreds of millions of dollars in Madden, you know, tens of millions of dollars in NHL and MLB The Show. Does this, you know, does that make you nervous about participating in them any more than you may not like to do it in the first place, but would that make you nervous about doing anything in them?
No, it doesn't at all, because you know, that's video games, that's all video games, that's Candy Crush, right? It's
not competitive though.
Well, sure, I mean, it's not competitive.
Come on, Rich, esports. This is the path to esports, Rich. Well, are you telling me we got a level playing field on esports?
My point is, I don't think regulation is the answer. My point, the issue is, to me, the core issue is whenever you introduce money into a community, it changes that community forever. And that's the ramifications. And when you participate in a community in which real world currency in any way, shape, or form becomes part of the experience, then you are already in a different world. But no, gosh, regulation is the last thing that you need. What you need, if you're going to have any sort of, and I don't mean real money, like I paid $60 for the game, right? That's just opens the door for you to experience it. I'm talking about in, you know, Ultimate Team and Diamond Dynasty. Whenever there's real money at stake, you know, Counter-Strike Go or, you know, League of Legends, you know, whatever it is, you have to either, if you want, it's going to go in one of two directions, right? Either it's going to grow and be positive because you've got a community that polices itself to a degree, and a developer who is committed to ensuring that the platform overall is as well maintained as it can be. Right. And again, not perfectly well maintained, because you can't ever have that. But you need the community to police itself and have the development team have the platform be regularly monitored and updated to ensure that as much as possible everybody has a good experience. Because if you don't, then you lose it all because you get people who use exploits and cheats for their own gain, and then they shut out other people in the community. And over time, whether it's a few months or a few years, you know, it just ultimately there's not nearly enough people left to keep it going. So no, to me, it's not about regulation. It's simply about, you know, when there's real money involved, it changes everything, and then you need to have a community that's willing to police itself and sort of maintain it. Because no matter what, I mean, unless you're, you know, Riot or, you know, unless like all you do is one thing, right, and your entire organization, you know, is dedicated to that, like Riot with League of Legends, I don't know that there's really that regulation or anything, or you know, I don't know that there's the resources are there where you can't rely on the community to a significant degree.
Mm-hmm. The thing that kind of separates them, Riot's very transparent. Like with the patches, they say this new thing, it's going to take a half second more to heal, but you're going to have 20 more hit points and all that. It's very, very clear what's happening.
Right. That's why I single them out. Because
yeah. So you do something, you know what you're going to get back. The thing specifically with this FIFA chemistry thing is we have no idea. Like they get two little yellow stars, two little green stars, I think it is, to show that their chemistry is a little bit better. But we don't know what that actually translates into, like in raw numbers. Like when we're playing MLB The Show and you see the IE boost has, oh, this guy's got a +4 overall. You can click into the card and say, okay, his contact's higher and his power's higher. But with the chemistry in FIFA, and I think Madden as well, you can't look at the screen and see the actual effects to like a specific statistic in the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what kind of separates that from something like Riot and MLB, where you can look at the card and be like, okay, this is what changed.
You have any thoughts on this, Millennium, to close us out here?
I do, and it was when you mentioned esports, the first thing that came up to me with regulation is something that happened very recently in NBA 2K. Mm. They had their road to the finals, and there was a known, I don't know if it's an exploit, but a gameplay boost that if you did a certain move as the point guard, you got a speed boost.
Yeah.
And it was used by a lot of the teams that made it into those finals. So then what they did was right before the finals tournament started, they patched that specific speed boost out.
Mm.
So I would rather see, and I think we saw better games for it. But is it fair?
The wrong people got in?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The wrong people may have gotten in, but using a strategy that was sound in the game,
right,
that was built into the game, is it fair to teams that used a certain strategy with gameplay to have that game completely change?
Yes.
Absolutely. For $250,000?
Really? After it started, Rich?
You're working on – you're playing on somebody else's platform, right? It's their platform to decide what the rules are. It's not yours. It's theirs. If they who own the platform, who set the rules, who own the game, who Rich. Pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for the rights to make the game and run it, if they decide that there's something about the experience that isn't right and they update it, of course.
Rich, wait. If the NFL puts a new rule in, they don't do that in the middle of a season. They don't do that in the
playoffs. Sure they do. No. Sure they do. They've done that before. It's not often, but occasionally they do. What about, remember in the NHL when Steve Avery was like
NHL, slapping
his
bitch.
Stick
nobody,
in front of Martin
Brodeur
and they immediately banned that move? You can do that. If something is broken, you can fix it. Nobody says you have to wait until some certain arbitrary date. If something's broken, you fix it.
There's generally, though, I mean, sure, there may be examples, but generally, though, when you start a competition with a certain set of rules, you don't change it in the middle. Like, you do it after, things even from start to finish, right? Because
yes, but these are computer games, and they, by definition, have issues and exploits, right? So you have the ability to make things better. I don't. To me, you try to make things better. You know, if I mean, you know, I think we were talking about this, you know, a couple weeks ago, right? Like a few years ago, the Madden Challenge was a complete catastrophe to watch because all people did was just this crazy exploits, and like it didn't even look like football. It just looked like some insanity, right? It was just completely nuts. So they changed the game so that even though, you know, the last Madden Challenge still had a lot of that, it wasn't nearly as bad as it was 2 or 3 years ago, right? These are computer games, computer systems. It's not like the NFL or the NHL, the NBA. It's a computer game. It has a completely different underlying mechanic. And if somebody finds a glitch or an exploit that means that it's not fun or not fair or just doesn't make sense, you fix it and you do it as soon as possible. That's what makes computer games different than other things.
That brings us back around, I think, to the question of like what constitutes an exploit, what constitutes a glitch, you know, all those things we talked about a little bit earlier. You know, when do they rise to that level where they have to take care of it immediately and they want to do so in the middle of a competition and all that, and when does it rise to the level where people should be banned? So, I mean, I think it's important that we had this discussion. I'm sure we're going to be touching on it more as we get resolutions to these two things. So we'll just have to keep monitoring everything that happens. But, you know, it's important that, hey, you know, we talk about it all. That people have a voice out there to express what's going on with them. Because, look, if unjust bannings happened, then we need to make that known. Everybody needs to know about it so that it doesn't happen again, so that when people get banned in the future, they aren't just left out on their own. So, and then in the case of FIFA, that they correct the issues, you know, and going forward, people know exactly what they're getting, that what they're spending their currency on, what they're spending their money on.
Let me say one more thing real quick. I think this ultimately comes down to whether you believe one of two things. Either you believe that the people who make these games are honestly trying their best to have a good game and a good community, or if you think that they're basically, you know, evil corporations that are trying to bleed as much money out of their consumers as you can. I personally believe that the guys that are running these things, ultimately, this is their livelihood. This is what they do. They really can't afford to screw this up. I think that these guys are trying their best to make things best. They might not always make the best decisions or execute them in the best way. I don't think they're evil. I don't think they're cynical. I don't think they dislike their communities. We all make mistakes, and when you're talking about situations like this where emotions run high, certainly bad things are going to happen sometimes, right? So I think that at the end of the day, I think most of the people involved in this are trying their best to do a good job. They just might be making mistakes along the way.
Yeah, and you can believe that, but like you said, it's you know, it's a question of, you know, were mistakes made at the same time, and it's quite possible that they have the best of intentions, but mistakes are made. And then it comes down to how do they deal with those situations and what recourse do consumers have? And that's, I think, what it comes down to. We're not, you know, in the case of the show's bannings, we're not mad that people were banned for doing something wrong. We're curious, we're concerned that people might have been banned for not doing something wrong and that they have a way to get that resolved.
Yep, I'm with you 100%.
Yep. So thank you, Rich, Millennium, TJ, for taking the time out to discuss everything. Make sure to follow those guys on Twitter. You can find their handles in the podcast summary. And thanks to all you listeners out there for tuning in. Hopefully we'll have some better news on this stuff coming up. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Press Row Podcast. Take care, everyone.